Blog Talk Radio.
Children where they are. This is Our Own Voices Live. Comes to you every Saturday at 12:30 p.m. on the West Coast. That's 3:30 p.m. for those of you on the East Coast. And I definitely appreciate all my listeners. But for you folks all the way on the East Coast, thank you for giving up your time. I know there's so much going on back there. But for you all to take the time out to listen to me out here is quite special. There's a whole lot going on in the news this week and probably in this coming week, so we'll get to that. Let me tell you a little bit more about Our Own Voices Live. Our Own Voices Live is a radio show featuring people and stories from our community in Las Vegas, the surrounding area, and someplace near you. America is the greatest country on earth due to its cultural diversity. and not in spite of it. Our mission is to help bridge the cultural and ethnic divide in America by working together to build the greatest bridge in history to unite us. It might seem a little tough nowadays, and some of the ways that we try to do that is with shows like Our Own Voices Live. Of course, Our Own Voices Live is taken from Our Own Voices magazine, digital and in print, and look for those to come back in a quite unique way. Got some plan for you. Of course, this show could not take place if it was not for the help, support, guidance, nurturing, and any other positive thing. Had it not been for that in the beginning, during, and still continuing, my co-host, Mrs. Angela Thomas. Welcome to the show, Angela. How are you?
Thank you so much, Rodney. I appreciate all the warm sentiment, and you know, it's a ebb and flow with me and you. You push me, I pull you, and vice versa. We just keep it going, though.
The show must go on.
It does. It does. I want to start the show today with sending love and blessings and prayers for peace. For I have family out in Kuwait right now in the middle of a situation. He's my friend, dear friend of mine, Jim Locke, who's in the Army. He's an officer in the Army, and he contacted me this week. And, you know, everything is going on in the world right now, and I just wanted to send light and love to him and the troops, all of our troops that are out there holding the line for us, holding it down with democracy. I'm very concerned, and, you know, just prayers for peace, man.
Well, we definitely need those prayers. It was at the gathering yesterday for a minute. Everyone at the gathering were veterans, whether retirees or serving a tour of duty. And it was just, we had Marines, we had Navy, we had Coast Guard, we had Air Force, Dr. Green representing the Army side of things. Just for a minute, especially as we're about to celebrate Independence Day a week from today, just interesting. Just a coincidence, but it was just kind of nice.
It was interesting.
Thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I haven't actually talked to my friend in a while, and he just sent me a message this week and, you know, just asked for prayer. And, you know, he's clergy in the Army, and, you know, for clergy to ask you to pray with and for them, it must be serious, and just sending light and love and prayers.
You know, the clergy in the military is dealing with a lot of things outside of what they normally have to deal with. And we often talk about what is done for people or that are in need of clergy or doctors, counseling, things like that. But I think sometimes the counselors, the responders, the doctors, the clergy may not get the attention that they need. Imagine having to deal with all of those things that, whether it's soldiers on the battlefield or in places of potential harm's way, to just people right here in the state who are constantly dealing with the many ills of society today. And then who is there for them? And, I appreciate you offering that prayer up to them, because they need those prayers. They need that in order for them to help us.
Yeah, and a prayer is powerful, but, I'm just asking, you know, just reminding our audience to, you know, also, you know, pray for my friend Jim Locke and pray for all of our friends and family that are deployed and trying to hold down the line. So everything, it's all appreciated. Just crucial times we live in, man.
And the times don't seem to be letting up. We are going from one thing to the other. Some people say it's just a news cycle. Maybe so. Maybe so. You know,
but if it wasn't real, the news wouldn't be reporting it. I'll say that.
That's what I say. And, you know, it's 24 hours. They have a lot of time to report a lot of things. And
a lot of things.
When you think about it, we were just, you know, there was a big prison break. Then we were grieving for the incidents in South Carolina.
Yeah.
And then there's been so much more to come out of that. And, you know, then there's a beheading that is happening here in America.
Yep.
Just this woman, a person beheaded, and then another woman who survived a beheading here in America.
Can you imagine? We are living in crucial and serious times, and it's moments sometimes when, you know, it's moments when friends reach out to you and they're doing their best to offer their best to our best and brightest and bravest, and they reach back to you. For my friend to reach back to me and say, Angela, I need you to pray and hold me down because, you know, I just need all hands on deck. And I appreciate you and I love you. I'm over here in Kuwait and I know it's just something. It's a reminder that, you know, things are free ain't free.
Oh, I know me. Is free, ever free. There is always a cost. Even when it says free, there's a cost.
Yeah, there's a cost to somebody somewhere. So, you know, I'm just reminded once more that all we are is dust in the wind. Sometimes it just feels in the grand scheme of things. And, you know, let's just all pray for one another and pray for peace.
And let's not stop with the prayer. Let's put some let's put some action into those words.
Oh, well,
and, I mean,
you know,
prayer
without works is what?
That's
right. Dead.
But I will say the prayer is an action. It definitely is an action. But let's put some physical work with those words to help bring those prayers to fruition. Because sometimes, you know, we look up to a heavenly body or a deity and we have the power to do whatever it is right here.
Yep.
So let's not miss those opportunities for us to do our part.
True. So true and so needed.
As long as we have life, we have ability. Well,
absolutely,
Angela,
my brother.
This has been full of all kinds of news. Sort of tough to pick one versus the other to start, but there's been a lot of stuff going on, a lot of stuff going on locally, as well as a lot of stuff going on nationally.
Nationally and international,
I don't want us to forget what's going on with the East Coast, and especially the Southeast Coast, but then those of us here in Las Vegas, a lot of folks were educated that those issues on the Southeast Coast, especially dealing with the flag, are not just Southeast issues. Those are some issues that hit us home squarely in the
face. At home, right?
Right here in Las Vegas. You know,
I tell
we
you.
Our teams are called the Rebels. Even have a song, a chant called Hey Reb. And when I first got here, saw the mascot, heard the song, knew exactly what it meant to me, but was looking at people applauding and cheering, thinking, what in the world?
What is going on here?
Well, Rodney, you do know this is the Mississippi of the West. And I said, well, yeah, I see. And nobody seems to mind.
And in light of, you know, everything that's going on in South Carolina, in Charleston. I send light and love to the families affected in the community. My grandson, Mikhail, is South Carolinian. My his dad is from, and family are all South Carolina folks. You yourself, my fabulous co-host from North Carolina. So
North Carolina, but keep in mind, my family was, I'm just above the North Carolina, South Carolina line on the East Coast, and my family
mm-hmm.
was actually enslaved in South Carolina.
So there's the connection again. You know, we are all but a heartbeat away from one another, and we should remember that. The connections are real.
Oh, say that again, Angela. Say that again.
We are all but a heartbeat away from one another, and we should all remember that. And, you know, that's just been the overwhelming message coming to me personally this week from my friend whom I haven't talked to in a minute, to reach out to me from Kuwait and then to see what's going on in Kuwait. It was a reminder that 6 degrees of separation does not exist anymore. We are all really, literally, a heartbeat away from one another.
You know, I was on some Facebook post this week, and some things has happened in the Supreme Court with Obamacare, as some
mm-hmm.
people call it, the actual name is the Affordable Care Act. Some people take exception to it being called Obamacare, but President Obama said he did care. And somebody says, well, what difference does it make what happens with this or that? That's just this. And someone else pointed out that, just like you said, or similar to what you said, well, we're all connected there. So what happens with one will impact.
Will happen to you.
Another. Now, we don't know how it's going to impact, whether it'll be pro or con, good or bad, but it will be an impact. And if you
yep.
are the one that's sitting on the sideline, then you are being impacted by others. And it's almost as if you're a leaf or a branch just blowing in the wind and standing on a slippery slope. And I was thinking, yeah, it does seem like we're just a slipping and a slide and a swaying because as a group of people, it doesn't seem like you really have impact. And that actually brings me to one of the topics on the show today, was that with this quick move with the Confederate flag, that a lot of people think well past time to have this movement, there's a group of people who are saying that, hey, this is not an issue. Why are we so interested in the Confederate flag? That some people even said this is a distraction. And I was like, wait a minute. Are we snatching victory from the jaws of defeat? I mean, what's going on here? We actually have changed something that, of course, should have been changed years ago, but hasn't. But yet now we're saying, ah, that's no big thing. I asked at the gathering yesterday, we had some giants of the community that were there. We had a local, Mr. Gene Collins, former local NAACP chapter president, a legislative official, was there with us. And he's in his 70s. And we had Dr. Robert L. Green, professor emeritus from Michigan State University, basically started their African-American studies program there and moved it forward. And, you know, we've heard young people say that our seniors and those older than them don't get a chance to share or have not shared with them. So actually they started talking, and they were just dropping some firsthand information. That
some jewels, absolutely.
Had to, you know, may have to go to the history book and read it if they can find it in those history books. And luckily I had my camera, and at first I was just so enthralled with what they had to say, but I was just listening. I said, oh, do you mind if I record this? Because other people need to hear it. I didn't get all of it, but I did get some of it, and I hope to get the video up sometime soon. But you know, they were sharing it, and they, I asked them specifically about the flag and was it a victory or not, and they shared their opinions on it. And to the man, they thought that, no, this is a victory, and this is something that we should really hold on to. But it's also the potential to a launching pad for more. You know, their thoughts was, you know, okay, you got this one, move on to the next one. And then the next one, don't stop, because like Angela said, freedom isn't free. Frederick Douglass says you have to agitate, you have to constantly push the envelope, so to speak. Just don't let them box us in here. Okay, they let us expand the box, the walls on the box. Let's push the roof up a little higher. Let's push those walls again. And we have to constantly do that until we get what it is that we think we should have.
And more than more, we have to be visionaries and be vigilant to that vision, too, because we can no longer. And, you know, Dr. Green and Mr. Collins' generation had that vision of, I don't want it just for me. I want this for my babies and my babies' babies. I don't want, in fact, Mr. Gene Collins absolutely said that yesterday. I did not want to sacrifice just for me. Nothing I did was for me. It was for y'all. For you guys to never know what it is to not be allowed somewhere simply because you're black. I did that for you guys.
It is disheartening on occasion to hear folks talk so negatively of the civil rights movement or call it a failure. And I try to point out that the goals that were before them that were stated, most of them were achieved. And once those things are achieved by that generation, doesn't mean that generation should go on retirement, but they are getting older and they've done a major, you know, they've done a lot of the heavy lifting. You would think that then the generations who come after them, who can reap the benefits, the rewards of that labor, those sacrifices, would then expand on what they were given. And I want us to look at that more as not looking at it from, oh, well, yeah, that was nice, but we really needed this, or you just didn't do enough. Then the question becomes to me is, what are you doing now? They did what they did, to whatever extent it was. Okay, now you are moving into the position of authority, you're moving into decision-making. What are you doing? Because if you're just lamenting on, oh, well, instead of getting up to this level, I think I should have gotten up to that level. The idea is they were down here, and then they moved it up to here for you to have that. Now, you build the next one. And that's a matter of focusing in. Maybe that's more of a glass half full versus half empty approach to it. But I, you know, for me, that is the approach that I was taught growing up, is we all have a role to play. You play your role to the fullest. Now, your role may be what your full capacity may be is less or more than this person. But that's for them to do. You do what you have to do. So it's time for us right now to do what we can do, build off of what was done for us already, those sacrifices. As a matter of fact, those people were willing to stand in front of dogs, water cannons, billy clubs, armed officers, National Guard in some cases, of course, mean-spirited citizens, folks running around with dust caps on and white sheets, waving a flag of defeat. And I want to say this about the flag, the rebel flag. I have seen the same groups of people who are saying how we need to celebrate that Confederate flag and these same groups of people talk about other groups, whether it's the Latino, Hispanics, the Mexicans, the Puerto Ricans, whomever it is, other groups, and say, wait a minute, we're in America, we're American, we celebrate the American flag. Okay, if that's your belief, that's your belief. Maybe it isn't theirs, but that's your belief. But that's what you say to them when they display a flag outside of the American flag. But here it is, we're the same people are embracing a flag of defeat of a nation that only lasted a very short while, that was defeated by the United States of America, who they were graciously invited back into after they succeeded from it, with South Carolina being one that led that charge. So I guess when I'm trying to look at this logically, the logic left, because if it's good for this over here, then shouldn't it be good for that over there? So the,
but see, the logic applied, the logic in your thought process is the informedness that it's with the information, it's with the history. Last week I was in Austin, Texas, and I was there surrounded by, you know, almost bookshelved in. On the first museum we went to see the African-American Women's Quilter, Black Women's Quilting Society's Juneteenth presentation of Black history at the National Texas Museum, I think it's called. I'll get the name straight in a minute. 1,700 Black women from across the country make up this society, and they mapped out so many pieces of our history, stuff I knew and stuff I didn't know, like in a piece of Black history that I didn't know, related to Black women particularly. The first person to have an international pilot's license was a Black woman. International. She was also the first woman, I believe she was the first female pilot here in the United States. But before she got her pilot's license here in the States, she had an international license. She was flying internationally already. So that happened in the 1890s. I'll check my facts in a minute on the date. It took a really long time. It might have been in the 1920s. I'll look at my fact sheet in a moment. But I didn't know that the first all-women's flight crew didn't happen until 2009, and the flight crew was all Black women.
That's right.
So, you know, you're saying these things, and you're saying this because you have an understanding of history. And we are so misinformed because we only look at what's presented in front of us. We have no reverence for what has happened already. And we have to stay vigilant and stay informed. I in Austin last week, I also, you know, learned another piece of history. First settlement of African descent was right here in North America, right in Uma, Mexico. Runaway slave defeated several. He ran and fought for 12 years for his freedom. So much, so effectively that the government finally came to him and said, look, what do you want? He's like, I want to go free. I just want to settle down, and I don't want to be bothered anymore. And they said, okay, you just can't free any more slaves. Now, he didn't just free himself. He freed a lot of other slaves, a lot of other slaves and free blacks were coming to settle with and around him. And they said, okay, just don't free any more slaves. Of course he did, but they never enforced, you know, the agreement was, okay, I'll give up freeing slaves and you guys stop chasing me. He didn't stop freeing slaves, and they never enforced any penalties against him. I'm going to put all of this footage up on our Facebook page. Rodney, if you want to post it on the Our Own Voices website as well, you're more than welcome to. But I made it my mission to, you know, make sure that I didn't just go witness this history and enjoy my trip. I filmed it so that others could be informed too. But the other part of my journey in Austin was that I went to the Lyndon Baines Johnson Presidential Library. And I've been processing that all week. Have you been to a presidential library before, Rodney?
Sure have not.
This was my first trip to a presidential library as well, my husband's as well. And I tell you, the most awe-striking experience in that visit was to come into the foyer of the museum and look up. I totally wasn't expecting this. It's a very stark white environment, very modern, all-white marble space. So I'm coming into the foyer, and it was a rainy day in Austin. At the time, we were running into the building because it was storming last weekend. And I looked up, and there was his presidential archive. I had to take a seat because I was so floored by the magnitude of that body of work, six stories high. Do you remember the big dictionaries that used to be in the public library when you would go to the library, Rodney?
I actually had one of those at my house, but yes, I do.
I do too. And each volume was thicker than that, 6 stories high. That's his presidential archive. And I turned to my husband, I said, and this is just one of his jobs. This was just from him being the president of the United States, as if that was a small task. But
right.
Could you imagine having an archive from just one of your jobs? And just, I wonder what it would look like. Would it measure up? 6 stories tall, completely, I would say, I don't know. I'm not good with measurements, but trust me, it was wide. I felt like dust in the wind. It's a very huge space. It was like 15,000 square feet, I think. That may be too small, but just to stand there and look up and see these large red-bound books with the gold presidential seal on each one of them and to see how thick they were. And then to go through the museum where, you know, they have a recreation of his Oval Office. But there were other things there, just statements that stood out to me, like him and his team saying, I don't know how to solve racism or poverty, but I'm going to throw everything I got at it, and hopefully something will rid our country of these two plagues. He considered those two issues America's only shortcomings. And if he could just solve those two or do something, he wanted to solve them, and he acknowledged. I love the humility in acknowledging, I don't know how to fix this. I done called all my smartest friends over here and gave them jobs, and they don't know how to fix it. But here's what we have. We got Head Start. We got national parks. Do you know, Lynn, 31 national parks came into existence under his administration? 31 national parks? So, you know, my point is we got to get out here and go take a look at the work that's been done on our behalf already and try to figure out a way to continue it.
Did it give you a different viewpoint of Lyndon Johnson? You know, we hear so many things about him, some myth, some true, and some just downright fiction, fiction being another word for lie. But did you come away with a different sense of the man?
I did. I came away, like I said, I tried my best to look past the politics of it all, past the party, because, you know, one of my favorite things, I took a picture of this quote. He said that he was definitely a party man. He was a Democrat till he dies. I'm a Democrat, and that's the lens I want you to, you know, view my body of work through. But I walked away feeling that he was much more human than I had come into the space feeling he was, and that he was sincere in trying to solve what he saw was problems that plagued our society. So however he had the opportunity to make some of these policies come to life, and they were vast. The summer jobs was created under Lyndon B. Johnson, and there were a lot of summer job programs. He felt that it was of the utmost importance to let young people know that they were of value and they were needed in the movement of our society. I don't think we spend enough time making young people feel like they're important to us and that their vision is needed, their voice is needed, their voice is a part of the process. I thought that was genius to have such a space where he created such a huge body of work. I mean, you go from Head Start, that's 3, 4, 5 years old, high school, grammar school, high school. One letter I read from a kid who wrote about Vista. He had learned about Vista at his Sunday school program, and he was so moved that Lyndon B. Johnson had started Vista. Now, that took me back to The Gathering, because our dear friend Alex and so many others that have come to the table were Vista. They were still working. That program is still in existence. They've been at our table. I know people, good people, that are working with Vista. But this kid was so moved to hear that Lyndon B. Johnson had created Vista that he immediately went home and put a plan together, did a carnival, and raised $600 for Vista. He was 10. This kid was 10 years old. We could all do something.
And speaking of all doing something, here's the question for you out there listening. What are you doing? What are you doing? Now, this is a rhetorical question. I mean, by all means, give us a call, 347-826-9600, 347-826-9600.
Now,
and
yesterday
share
you
with
dropped
us.
A jewel at the gathering. Stopped me dead in my tracks. We were saying how things were hard and difficult, and you called us to task on that. You just took me back to my visit to Austin, Texas during Juneteenth weekend, and just, you know, spending some time amongst history where things were really hard. And you were right to say, I dare you sit here in the lap of luxury, because, you know, it's pretty luxurious. The way we're living right now compared to what we've been through as a country, and that's all of us. So, you know, I wanted to publicly thank you for that good check-in. It was needed. And I'm going to work hard at not saying it's hard, because you were exactly right. We don't know what hard is. We simply don't. We can't imagine the hardships. Can't imagine the hardships, really, what it was like day to day to live some of the hardships that folks were going through every day and lived a lifetime in, hoping and praying that their kids would get to where we are right now. Or dare we say things are too hard?
It is amazing. When I hear, I am amazed constantly, and I shouldn't be but shocked when I hear people complain about the civil rights movement and what was left undone and what else should have been done and how it was a distraction. There's so many things that I hear. And I'm sitting there in a place where we could not have met publicly before these things happened. Even when we think about the church in South Carolina that everyone has now realized that Denmark Vesey was a member of that particular congregation and helped organize a slave rebellion from that church, and later was shut down, was even burned at. But here is something I want folks to realize is that that was the only place black people could, you know, assemble, was the church, because of the restrictive laws of slavery, during slavery, and then Jim Crow after Reconstruction. And Reconstruction was a very short period. We thrived and, you know, we created a whole bunch of stuff during that period, but it was very short. And then we went back into the pseudo-slavery of Jim Crow, which is what I was born in. And I realized, when I asked the age of the folks around me, that none of them had firsthand experience with Jim Crow. None of them lived during Jim Crow. I also realized that someone said that they took offense to being called colored. And I'm not saying that I champion it. I just, you know, thought about it and said, well, on my birthday,
I've been called worse.
Color, and I'd have much rather have been called colored than some of the things that we call ourselves today.
Yeah.
So I just try to put those things into context and say, you know, let's move forward. It's great.
We have to start.
We should have a grasp of history, but let's move forward.
We should call each other and hold each other to those things. I'd like to read something. It was in the foyer of LBJ's Presidential Library. It's LBJ's goals. And this was what he had written, what he wrote down as his goals. It says, enrich and elevate our national life, advance the quality of our American civilization, make progress the servant of our needs, create abundance and liberty for all, end poverty and racial injustice, enrich minds and enlarge talents, feed the desire for beauty and the hunger for community. Renew contact with nature. Make our cities great. Protect the nation's natural splendor. Give every child a place to sit and a teacher to learn from. Prevent poverty from undermining learning. Reduce poverty through education. Give every citizen full equality. Give every citizen an escape from the crushing weight of poverty. And finally, help all nations live in enduring peace. This is from the 1964 commencement speech at the University of Michigan, where LBJ unveiled his vision for a greater society. Those were his goals.
Lofty goals.
Very.
Some of them achieved, some of them partly
and some
achieved. But they were goals. They were targets. It gave us something to shoot for. And we need goals. We need targets, like we need standards. We need something to measure our progress by. And though LBJ was by no means a saint, and
sure,
at one point you could actually say LBJ himself was a racist and maybe even a white supremacist. But people can change. And sometimes even when you are those things, you can still do some good.
You can still be other things.
We have to recognize both.
Absolutely. And, you know, those were the things that I saw in his space that stood out to me. And I must say that I was happy that I went and trudged through the Texas humidity and heat. And found my way over to see his presidential library. Both of us, my husband and myself, left there inspired and better off for having gone to see it firsthand for ourselves. So if you ever, you know, and it also brought a bit of fictive kinship for what's to come with Obama's library. We're Chicagoans. And to know that there will be a presidential library in my city, I can't tell you how excited I am for that. I'm still trying to figure out where they're going to put this big old giant space, because they need a lot of room to put presidential archives, apparently. That's a lot of paper. That's a lot of work. So to think that that's about to happen to my city, and that so many kids like me from the west side of Chicago will have an institution where they can access history like that is really inspiring. I'm really excited about that, and I can't wait to see it.
Symbolism, symbols are very important, and we have to embrace them when we have them. That's something positive. Just like the symbol of the Confederate flag, it's an important symbol.
Right.
And what it symbolizes for African Americans, and really what it symbolizes for Americans, is a struggle where a lot of people died. It was just horrendous in the number of people who died, in the ways that they died. And one of the things that the Civil War has in common with our modern wars is the amount of amputation, whether it was immediate on the battlefield or later in what sort of passed as hospitals, the amount of amputations. And mind you, they didn't have anesthesia like they have today.
Right now today, yeah.
Bet you got a stick to put in your mouth if you're fortunate. If you were really fortunate, you got a chance to take some swig off some rye whiskey or something like that. But otherwise,
right,
your stuff was just sawn off. And a lot of the injuries that they did suffer during that war that caused them to have these limbs so sawn off could have been prevented today. In other words, there was other measures, not to mention it would have been a lot less painful. And then, and when you lived in a time from the agrarian community and the Industrial Revolution is, you know, kicking off, these men became destitute after the war, the ones who survived, who had, because they oftentimes couldn't walk because they lost their legs or a leg, or they lost an arm or arms. They didn't have safety nets like they have today. So a lot of people gave up a lot. And for the ones who started the war, and let's be clear, the South started the war.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have to move on beyond that. But they're the ones who started the war. They're the ones who succeeded from the United States. And the Confederate flag is a symbol, back to symbolism, of the start of the war, the secession from the United States, and what led to a lot of the country's best and brightest at the time to give up their life, limb, and in some cases, their good mind to a cause that was about enslaving. And people can say, well, it's about states' rights. Well, yeah, there were states' rights involved, but the state right was the right to enslave another group of people. So when I hear people sort of do wordplay with that, yes, you're right, it had something to do with state rights, but the state right that it had something to do with was being able to decide whether you wanted to enslave another group of people when you have a constitution that you've embraced that said all men are created equal. So, you know, when you put the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence together, all men are created equal, and then you had those things that supported it with the Bill of Rights, when you put those things into that context, yes, it was state rights, but Hitler was going for his country's right to kill and massacre and destroy and do some very
God knows what else,
to
maim
group
and
people,
right,
which he got from the playbook of America. How about that? And from America, and yes, part of it from the Confederacy. So let's not try to clean this up and try to make this history somehow something else that it wasn't. No, the state's right that they were fighting for was the right to subjugate another people, my ancestors, so that they could make money. Some people said, well, no, it's just about commerce. Yes, it was about commerce, too, and greed. Yes, it was about that. But it was ultimately
but
based
don't try to, yeah,
of slavery.
Let's see, this is, you begin to amputate the pieces of history that don't reflect your narrative when people are not vigilant and keeping their eye on history. That's why, what's the old saying? If you don't know your history, you are doomed to repeat it. That's how it happens.
And we will repeat it if we give up that vigilance on it. And it may not be exactly how it was. I mean, let's think about it. Our president, the so-called first black president, Bill Clinton, signed a bill into law that has led to the incarceration of more black people than any other president in our history. And he was supported by his wife in doing it, who's now running for president and is expecting to get the black vote. And when I think about that, and she's making an appeal to women and specifically black women. And I try to sit back and just sort of put that into some type of focus.
Sort that out.
And maybe, maybe there's some bias. But I says, okay, you're expecting black people and black women to vote for you when you, well, your husband, along with your support, did something to incarcerate,
decimate
some people,
the black family, to decimate the black family. Now you remove the black man, there's no one to protect the women, the children, and you know, I know I'm gonna get in trouble with all of my sisters, but for real, that's just the reality of the situation.
And And there is an expectation that these same women who lost their sons, husbands, uncles, grandfathers,
right,
and who suffered because of it, these same women who remain single and oftentimes when asked why, they say, well, there's not a eligible pool of black men. And when you ask them, you know, where are they? Why aren't they there? And they say, well, you have a certain number that are incarcerated. There's a certain number that are homosexual. There's a certain number that are uneducated. You know, they just go down this litany. And we think, well, but yet you're going to support this woman who is partially responsible for your predicament, your plight? I guess for me, it does not pass the logic test. Don't slap me, and then after you slap me, kiss me and tell me that it's okay.
Well, it's getting interesting. And over the next year and a half, it's going to be even more interesting.
We have a local politician, a state politician here, assemblywoman, who said that she wanted to put more time and effort into the black agenda. We also have the Million Man March anniversary coming up on 10-10-15, October 10th, 2015. And that's a big event, and it's something that should be celebrated because it did show a certain level of unity. And what I want to say to folks is, whether you go or not, ultimately it's what's done after we rally together, after we march. Now, there's nothing wrong with rallying and marching. It has a role to play. But it's what are we going to do? And the reason why I bring it up is it goes back to that black agenda that the young assembly woman here was speaking of. We've had Bernie Sanders come to visit us. We've had Hillary Clinton come to visit us. And we're going to have, I believe, all of the elected officials coming to our state here in Las Vegas, as well as going to South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Because these are early voting states. You know, we got Vermont, we have New Hampshire, but we also have South Carolina and Las Vegas. And when those folks come to talk to us, and when they have their focus groups, now let's keep in mind that these focus groups are primarily a dog and pony show. Primarily a dog and pony show. Because what
mm-hmm.
they usually do, not always, but what they usually do, especially in the early stages, is they pull people from the party who are true believers. Some people would call them yes people. Other people call them bootlickers. I call them, these are true believers. Because it's safe. They're not typically going to ask you or say something that is off the talking point. And they'll tell you beforehand, this is what we want you to talk about. These are questions. So let's just keep that in focus of what it really is. It's theater, drama. And what I'm suggesting to you out there is, for those of you who are maybe not a party loyalist, for those of you who may not be the ones that will just stick to the talking points and ask the soft, easy questions, why don't you set up a forum, look at the schedule. So, you know, you want to do it in advance, because if you just do it up close, they'll say, no, we don't have time for that because we have to arrange security and we have other speaking engagements, et cetera, et cetera. But we know that they're coming to South Carolina. We know that they're coming to Las Vegas, my city.
Mm-hmm.
And this applies to me, too. And I believe we should set up forum events of our own outside of the party loyalists, the party regulars, and invite them to these forums, to these town halls. And now, I don't mean invite them there to beat up on them, because who wants to get beat up on? But what I am saying is invite them there to ask true questions from the people. And not just ask questions. Sometimes that's all we do is we ask. So let's tell, T-E-L-L, let's tell them what we see. Let's tell them what we feel. And let's tell them what we want. I want this because of this, this, and this. That's it. That's what I want. Now, those things you may tell me I want, maybe I do, maybe I don't. But it's not for you to tell me what I want. It's for me to tell you what I want, what I need, and then for you to figure out a way to make it happen, because you are there to represent me. I am not here to represent the party. I am not here to represent you as the campaigner. I am here as an American citizen that has the full right, or somewhere near the full right. I'm still a black person in America. And I expect this, this, and this. And so I'm putting that out to the listening audience. 347-826-9600, 347-826-9600. When these candidates come to these cities, what are you going to tell them? Are you just going to, you know, hit the applause line? Are you just going to stick to the talking point? Because if you do, I want you to think about it. Black people have roughly a 20, what is it? No, our unemployment rate is and has been double that of white for a long time now.
For decades. That's
that,
right.
Oh, we're just expecting jobs out the sky, because black people have a role in creating their own businesses, supporting their own businesses, and hiring their own people. I'm with that 100%. As a matter of fact, I also am one of those who say, look, we have a role to play in this, and we need to play our role. How can we expect somebody to help us when we won't help ourselves? You know, we have a role to play. Let's play our part. But at the same time, if there are things that are structurally impeding us from those jobs, from those contracts, then those barriers need to be taken down, and we need our elected officials to do that. You're listening to Our Own Voices Live. Our Own Voices Live comes to you every Saturday at 12:30 p.m. on the West Coast.
And 3:30 out East.
Our topic today is small victories and the Confederate flag, because I believe the taking down of the Confederate flag, when it happens in South Carolina, I believe it happened in Alabama. There's work on it in Georgia. And let's not forget places like Tennessee. Yes, it is one thing, and it is a thing, but it is a symbol of something much more. Obviously, racism, biases, prejudice, these are afflictions of the mind. These are ideologies, and removing a piece of fabric probably is not going to change the ideology of people who are here now. But we also have to do something, Anderson. We have to look past the now, whether it's looking back into our history or looking forward into our future. As a tax-paying person in America, for me to see a Confederate flag, whether it's on my school mascot or whether it's on the flag of a Capitol building, to see that is a constant reminder of those people who wanted to enslave me, and it makes me wonder, is that what they want to do today? And as a taxpayer, that symbol does need to come down. And for those places where it's already been taken down, those businesses, whether it's Disney, others that have taken it down off of their website, have ceased receiving and in some cases even selling merchandise with it on it, because it propagates an ideology. It helps keep that ideology alive. And if we want to stop this beast, we have to stop it from spreading out in every angle. This is a full spectrum warfare against it. And so every place where we can cut it off, it needs to be cutting off, and we need to keep chopping until we get to the roots and pull it out by the roots and then throw it into the fire. 347-826-9600. 347. Love to hear from you. this topic because it is a victory. I believe it's a victory, and I believe it's a victory that we should celebrate. We shouldn't sit on our laurels, and we shouldn't think that it's, you know, things have changed overnight because it hasn't. But it is a victory. Now, Rahm Emanuel, who is the mayor of your city, Angela, I believe he's the one that's quoted that says, never let something bad go without basically squeezing something good from it. Huge paraphrase. And
well,
what he's talking about,
I'm trying to figure out what to do with that statement and the tax bill I get, because I still own property in Illinois, and right now Rahm, he's known as my tax bill. He's killing me.
Well,
he's making me hurt.
You know, taxes,
he's making me hurt.
We,
he's making me pay.
We have a role in taxes. Are those taxes fair? Are the taxes burdensome? Are we getting what we need from the taxes? You know, because sometimes we get taxed on stuff that happened 100 years ago. Well, if it
That's
happened
right.
100 years ago, you would think it would be paid for.
Why
right
am I
now.
Still paying?
You know, did the telephone, did the electric grid get put up yesterday? Or did it get put up 100 years ago? And we still
right.
paying taxes on it. Oh, the telephone line. Yep, it's spread across the country. But we're still paying taxes on it. So we do need to look at all of those things. And we need to look at it with a critical eye. And we really need to look at things outside of the constructs of party, because that is the structure. And as black people, when we're looking at party, remember that unemployment rate, 10.1%, took a momentary dip to 9-point-something, the first time it had been down in the single digits in decades. Well, it doesn't make a difference whether it's Democrat or Republican in the office. You still have double-digit unemployment. So are they really there for us? Have we pushed them to be there for us? That's the role that we have to play. Or do we just continuously go with the party line? Wait. You know, there was major stuff, actions that happened in the Supreme Court this week. But what happened in there that benefited us specifically? Can we have something? Other groups have it. Can we have something? I'm looking at the Facebook pages and the colorations of the profile pictures. I see that. All right. So where is ours? Where is that legislation for us? You know, where is that education, the changing of the education that includes black people, Africans, throughout history, throughout our curriculum? I would say to all of the people who are listening, one thing that we can say to these presidential candidates and other elected officials, because it's not just the president that's up for election in 2016, there are other officers. When these folks come through to us, let's tell them specifically, hey, we want you, if you're running for president, we want to know what is your stance and what are you going to do through the Department of Education, whether we like it or not, it's there for now. What are you going to have them do to integrate and incorporate African-American and African history and culture throughout all curriculum, pre-K through 12 in all schools of higher learning that are publicly funded? I want to know now, what's your plan? Do you have a plan? When is it taking effect? There it is. So if you're looking for something to say, there's something to say. What is your plan to help curtail this police violence and killing of black people, unarmed black people? What are you doing? What is your plan? No, I don't want to hear that. Okay, yes, it is nice to hear it. You say it's tragic and we need to do better, we need to do more. But that is not a plan.
So what is your 10-point plan?
I want to hear the plan. And if you want to hear the plan, I want to hear the plan.
I want to hear the plan. What's the plan to prevent this? Because if they're killing my kids today, you better believe they're coming for yours tomorrow. That's just reality. So
I
want to hear the plan.
Yeah, and we can give them our plan because it's a good possibility they don't have a plan. Well, that's okay because I know that you want to represent me. That's why you're here. You want my vote so you can go and represent me. And since
Lyndon
you didn't
B. Johnson
have
and his friends, his cabinet said, I do not know how to solve it, but here's what we have. And When I tell you, they said they didn't know how to solve racism or poverty, but they had two rooms of programs and initiatives and things that they had put forth into the world to help combat it. Where's that stuff at? Where is the two museum-sized rooms of things that we're going to use and enact in our communities and society that is going to combat it? Period.
Where's
Lyndon B. Johnson and that generation of folks, they put forth their plans. They enacted their plans. They put their ideas out there. They made their things happen, and it's still happening. Vista's still around, for example. Head Start is still around, for example. Black Panther Party, with all of its political strife and however you feel about whatever they did, but free lunch is still in schools today. Free breakfast is still in schools today. So, you know, politics aside, party aside, whatever you're angry about aside, what are you doing? What are you working on? Who are you working on it with? Because you can't do it all yourself.
What coalition
are
we building amongst ourselves? You know, we can talk this stuff all day long, but ultimately it's what we do collectively.
It's the work.
So where are we putting these coalitions together? And I'm going to go back to what I say quite often, is yes, we don't always agree on things, but it's okay to not always agree. But what is it that we do agree on? And because it's going to take effort to get past what we don't agree on. Okay, got it. But what is it that we do agree on, or who out there agrees with you, can you work with to move these things forward? You know, there's some stances that... Go ahead, Ashley.
Absolutely. There was a picture in the museum of MLK, President Johnson, and Whitney Young. Do you think those three men agreed on everything?
Obviously not.
Clearly they didn't. But they were in the room together, figuring out what they could work on together, and not just, you know, figuring it out, putting it out there, making it work. This is what you can contribute, MLK. You have the gift of gab. You can deliver the message to the masses. And once you get their attention in the way that you can get their attention, I can then say, I have a groundswell of people here on the ground mobilized and asking for this to be done. I can take that to Congress and make them do something. And then once I do that, Whitney, you do what you do on your end. And all three of us doing what we do can come together and move this one thing right here, or these two things. And if these two, three things here move, then some of this other stuff will move. Basically, it's a bunch of things going to move if the three of us just play our part, do what we can do.
We all have a part to play. There's someone on the Facebook page on Our Own Voices Live. That's right, we do have a Facebook page, Our Own Voices Live, and it is up right now. And they brought reference to Jews and the LGBT community. And there's a meme that's up that it shows a picture of the Nazi flag and what it means to Jews. And therefore, we don't see Nazi flags flying on capitals and being embraced, nor do we see that in Germany. And then there was the picture of the Confederate flag and said to black people, the Confederate flag, the symbolism of it is at least to African Americans what it is to the Nazi, the swastika is to Jews and Jewish Americans. And it should be treated no less than an aberration to society as the Nazi flag. And that's how I see it. And that's how we mm-hmm. need to treat it. It is no different. No, there were 6 million Jews that they say were killed. It's an untold number of Africans who were killed. Obviously in the millions. And then we talk about those who were enslaved in this country. For hundreds of years, Jews were in captivity roughly, well, it was less than, it was about a decade from beginning to end, maybe mm-hmm. a little less than that. Not to belittle their struggle, but I'm just showing a level of, if it's this response for this action here, and this is what happened to us, why is it so difficult for people to understand why this is so important to us and why this has to be done? 347-826-9600. We only have a few minutes left in our broadcast today. And so we wanted to talk about the Confederate flag. But now we talked about the Confederate flag in South Carolina. But what about the references to the Confederacy right here in Las Vegas? Our university, University of Nevada, Las Vegas, UNLV, the Running Rebels. Now, some people say, well, we say rebels because of the rebelliousness of Nevada when it came into the Union. Because, you know, Nevada was not a slave state. And I wondered if the people who gave us Beauregard, as he's called now, I wonder if they realize, if they know their history, that Nevada was not part of the Confederacy. That Nevada came into the Union on October 31st. And the reason why it came in October versus January 1st was so that Lincoln could get another state into the Union. It was also that Lincoln can get some electoral votes to help ensure that he won the presidency. And think about it. When Lincoln was running for president, right, the Confederacy had succeeded. But who was still voting? Even though they said had succeeded from it. So I just want us to take these things into context as to what's going on, what has gone on, and how things of the past impact today, and what goes on today will impact, if not our future, because we may be
and how history, how history is co-opted. Sometimes we need to just look at the work of an individual. Lyndon Baines Johnson. I gotta admit, I didn't go into the library liking all of the story that I thought I understood about him. But I left his presidential library with a great deal of respect for the work and for his intent. Was it perfect? Was it a perfect effort? No. But whose effort is perfect?
Well, since there's no perfect person, I'm guessing there's been no perfect effort. Now, there's
right.
some people who get tens doing gymnastics, but that's pretty rare. So
right.
no perfect person, no perfect anything.
So, you know, I have to say, sometimes we have to put away our understanding and go forward and look at the story in as much of the complete context as we could possibly muster. Lyndon Baines Johnson's story, I only knew parts of it. And, you know, I still don't know all of it, although I did go to his presidential library, but it was a lot of the nuances that I left there a changed person because I had had that experience. Standing in that foyer and seeing six stories of archives, thick as I am across each volume, as I am across, you know, as a human being, as these volumes were that big. These were thick volumes of paper and activity, a flurry. This represented a flurry of activity during one person's presidency of this country. With that much work being done, that much paper alone being generated, how can we really completely understand the complexities and every nuance of that job, and, you know, how much responsibility that is for anybody that holds that office? I'll tell you what, I went in there with a great deal of respect for the presidency, for the office of the presidency of the United States, but I left there with even more respect for it. Because to see one person's experience in that job, the result of it, it pauses you. And to know, this is something that I came to feel I knew after having that experience. Whatever biases he went into that office with, you have to know that every day, every particular situation he dealt with, he had to deal with his biases and still come out and do what was best for the body and not for his understanding of people and his biases. And, you know, there's so many things you must have to put aside when you are in a seat of leadership.
Yes, there is. And Angela, we have a caller online.
Awesome.
It's Lee, and he's going to come on and share some of his thoughts with us. Welcome to Our Own Voices Live, Lee. What did you have a question?
Hey, Lee, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. I'm in California, and I just did a show yesterday on the historic Supreme Court decisions. But I wanted to talk about LBJ really quick because, you know, there's a concerted effort in this country by the conservatives to knock down the war on poverty and say it's a failure and it still exists and all these other talking points. When in fact, you know, the war on poverty was at its most successful rate the first 10 years, I think, when it first came out, because there was a different form of government, and so people
mm-hmm.
bought into it and supported it. So it's fluctuated, but the thing they don't talk about, the right, when they start criticizing the war on poverty, is they say, well, listen, we still have poverty, but it hasn't grown exponentially the way it would have if we didn't have these programs in place. So I get really tired of the veiled PR campaign that the right does when it comes to poverty and working poor, because what we have today is basically, forgive the term, slave wages. We have stagnation. We have a middle class that's being eradicated. We have a very wealthy class that is getting more wealthier. And all we ever hear about when we talk about wage increase is condemnation of things like improving minimum wage. And you get people that, like Chris Christie, who make fun of it and say, well, who sits around the dinner table and talks about minimum wage? Well, there's a lot of people that do, because minimum wage, if you increase it and make it relative to what our inflation rate is in this country, how we haven't kept up, we haven't indexed it properly. If we were to do that, we'd have so many more people out of governmental assistance programs like SNAP, less people relying on food stamps. There's a lot of hardworking Americans that are working three jobs just trying to make ends meet, where if they got $3 or $4 an hour more, they would be pouring that back into the economy. So it just really sickens me when I hear people criticize, not you guys, but LBJ and the war on poverty, because I think that was a heartfelt intervention that he did on behalf of not just African-Americans, but white Americans as well.
I would like to see some of these candidates and some of the people you just spoke of. I dare them go to LBJ's presidential library or probably any of the other presidential libraries and still balk at the effort. And I would love for them to stand in that foyer amongst his archive, his presidential archive, and articulate to me and others, the rest of us, how they're going to do something of equal or better measure.
Yeah, they
Let's
won't.
Let's do it. Let's
they
do
won't.
It.
Yeah, they won't do it because they don't understand that the way our oligarchy society is going right now, that in order to have a healthy economy, you got to grow it from the inside out. You don't grow it from the top down.
Mm-hmm.
And so the only thing that people talk about on the right when they talk about economic improvement is they talk about incentivizing small business and all these other talking points, tax exemptions, tax decreases, no tax increases. Look at Sam Brownback and look at Kansas. If you want to see a perfect model of how supply-side economics works, take a look at Kansas, take a look at Louisiana, and see what that those typical economic policies from the right do to a state. You know, states have to balance their budgets annually. Louisiana had a $1.6 or $1.2 billion deficit. Kansas had an $800 billion deficit. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. You cannot grow an economy, in Kansas, not billion. You can't grow an economy from giving tax cuts, tax exemptions, and other right policy implementations and think that you're going. And then they start cutting. So when that happens, all they do is they cut schools, they go after pensions. It's a vicious cycle. It never works. And so I'm tired of the middle class going backwards. I'm tired of the working poor working and being poor. And, you know, there's going to be a revolt sometime. And that's why people like Bernie Sanders, I think, are so important to push the reality to people. And when he gets on the campaign circuit with debates, he'll be able to pull Hillary to the left and really talk about things that are reality, not just the typical criticisms of the Clinton Foundation and other distractions that the right tries to do. So,
I feel you, man. I really would love to see one of the debates right there in the foyer of the LBJ Presidential Library. Let's hold all of the debates in the presidential libraries. Let's do that this campaign.
Yeah, and one last thing, if I may, really quick, because I really appreciate you guys giving me the time to talk on your show. You know, the Confederate flag, or whatever you want to call it, crossing bars, whatever, you know, it was an act of treason. Lincoln did not want one state. As a matter of fact, he said he would rather be, this is eerie, he'd rather be assassinated than see one state secede from the Union. That's how strongly he felt about keeping the Union together. And so all these people that complain about their freedom to hoist the flag, and Nikki Haley never would have addressed and taken down the flag had it not been for that
tragedy
murder
had not happened
in
Absolutely.
South Carolina. And so that tune
In fact,
flipped
she had made
really
the
quick.
Statement just last week, the week before.
Oh, yeah.
That she had no intention.
That's right.
Basically.
They were, oh, we'll get to it. You know, it's part of our heritage. You want to know what that is? That is just a veneer for those racists that want to try to integrate heritage and all these other false alignments to the South. You don't need a flipping Confederate flag to memorialize treason. You don't even need monuments. You want to have monuments? Fine. You want to put them in a museum where people can pay an admission fee or go see these not in public display. I mean, it was on the state capitol, for God's sake. How many African-Americans had to walk by?
They just locked some people up for cutting it down.
Hey, you know what? She should have jumped on that flagpole, got some bull cutters, and cut that flag down.
She did, and within the hour, a new one was up there. She did just that. She cut it down, and by the time she made it down off the pole, they arrested her, and within the hour, the flag was back up there.
Oh, yes, you're talking about that one girl, right. Yeah, yeah, I was talking about the governor. You're right, yeah, mm-hmm. That one lady, they did arrest her, you're right. And good for her. And I bet you somebody will jump up and defend her pro bono. And, you know, it's about time that we stop making excuses as a country, and particularly the conservatives in power from these southern states. They need to start it. And Obama said it great in his eulogy, something to the effect that he was quoting Clementa Pinckney, saying that everybody needs to understand everybody else's personal history, not just mm-hmm. the white Caucasian Southerners and their love for the Confederate flag. They need to understand the African-American history with that time. And if
the kid that did this awful thing at Mother Emanuel Church, he did it because he went and researched and did become acquainted with the history. And I think that's a part of this story that the mainstream media keeps glossing over. They keep trying to paint this as a lone wolf, uninformed incident. This was a terrorist act, and it was very deliberate. And he keeps telling everybody, I'm not crazy. I did this on purpose.
Oh yeah, I read up on, in preparation for a show. I went to the language of the people who were spearheading the secession from the Union, and it was disgusting. So matter of fact, not inflamed rhetoric, just a simple. These people were racist. They believed African Americans were unfit to be citizens, that they were inferior. They even gave white slaves more credence because they were white slaves. That's how racist these people were. So you're right. When somebody twisted can go out and feed himself on that hateful vitriol and then be gifted a gun when he's a flipping felon criminal, had a record by his uncle, and South Carolina has some of the most lax gun laws in the country, then you got the perfect storm, you know. And then you got the NRA, which nobody wants to take on, and nobody wants to go after them and challenge them. And until somebody does that, this is going to happen again and again and again. So, you know what, man, I don't know. I think a revolt is going to happen, and I think we need to embrace the opportunity to protest. You guys were talking earlier about what do? You got to protest. You got to get it out there, and you cause enough waves, and people will listen. There doesn't have to be violence. There doesn't have to be riots. People need to stand up and protest. And if we do that, and corporate America does that, when Indiana tries to pass their racist religious freedom crap, you know, and discriminate, then we'll start making some headway.
All right, well, thank you for your call.
Yeah, thank you for the call. I hope you'll listen to further show. You can always go to Our Own Voices Live on Facebook.
I am going to do that. I'm going to follow you guys.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
And follow my show, Civil Chat with Lee. I appreciate the time, and God bless you.
Will do. All right, man. Thanks so
much.
Peace. Bye-bye.
Peace.
Wow, he brought up some very good points. One of the things I was going to say is I just want to make sure that we don't get lost in the politics of it all, that we have had Democratic Congresses, we have had Democratic state houses, Democratic governors, and of course Democratic presidents. And these flags in these states have still remained up. The actions of our presidential leadership has been lackluster in many cases. There are some exceptions of brightness, as he mentioned, and as you
this is a 20-year battle.
The
last time we were actively trying to get the flag down, I won't even say its name. We all know what flag I'm talking about. Was 20 years ago, and it was a very shameful display that it didn't happen. it's just amazing that 20 years later we could even question whether this is necessary and that it's a victory.
And let's just think about the Georgia flag. The Georgia state flag is what's changed in recent times. This is not something from right after the war. This is recent times. The Georgia state flag has the Confederate flag as a part of it. And this is what the citizens of Georgia, whether they are embracing the what people say is their Southern heritage, to me they're embracing the slavery part of their Southern heritage, but that's a part of their flag. And I'm posting that up because I want people to see that this is a part of their flag and that it needs to come down. Also, I'm posting up the Mississippi flag because I want people to see it. We have to see it, these symbols.
Make
we
sure you put up
it.
The UNLV rebel flag and you know, that our Senate Majority Leader brought this up and said, hey, we need to make sure that we change this.
These symbols do play an important role in this country and in how people conduct themselves, how they act.
Absolutely.
Whether it's with the young man, and he was a man, he's not a boy, with the young man who massacred those nine people, who assassinated them,
who sought out that sacred place, that sacred place in Black history. Mother Emanuel was a part of the Underground Railroad and a part of, it's over 200 years old. It's 200 years of American history associated with that church. It was burned to the ground and laws were changed to stop Black people from being able to have their own churches because the membership at Mother Emanuel was not just about praying. They pushed until something happened with their actions.
So flags, they are symbols, and those symbols, like them, need to come down. And as they come down, I encourage Black people to embrace it. It is not the end of this fight. It is not the only struggle that is out there. There are others, but it is a victory. And we should embrace the victory and use it as a stepping stone to build the momentum. You know, this is how things work. It builds momentum to do other things. So let's not belittle the accomplishment, because it is an accomplishment. It is taking us further than we've been before. And I am embracing it. I hope that others will do the same thing. The flag has to come down. Do not lose sight on the massacre that happened, the assassination, the terrorist act that happened at Mother Emanuel, First African Episcopal Church. But we're not forgetting that. But let's embrace that there is movement. And once it starts, you know, it takes a lot to get things to move. We need to do our part to push it even further.
To keep the momentum
and that's what
up. Absolutely.
Today our show was about the Confederate flag and small victories. And now that we have it, how do we turn it into a big victory? And let's not snatch this victory from us. Let's build upon this victory. Let's look for ways where we can unify and not continue to talk about our differences, because we'll always have them. But for those of us, especially in the Black community, let's talk about the things that we have in common. Let's focus our attention and our efforts on those to bring them to fruition. I posted some pictures, Mississippi flag, the Georgia flag. I'm looking for the Running Rebels flag and mascot. I'll try to get that up later. Angela, what else did you have for us?
I just wanted to say, you know, my trip last week was very enlightening. It was very nice to be in Austin, Texas during Juneteenth weekend and to take a walk, take that bookended walk through history, black history, but also American history, and kind of iconoclast the two together. And I left that experience feeling like we could do it. We've already done it. So let's just get to work. Continue to work.
Well, there you have it. I'm wishing everyone a early July 4th weekend coming up, Freedom. One of the things that I'm going to be talking about that on that show is July 4th to African Americans what Columbus Day is to Native Americans? Is July 4th to African Americans what Columbus Day is to Native Americans? And should we even still celebrate Columbus Day? And how should we celebrate July 4th, knowing that that Declaration of Independence still kept Africans as slaves to the people who were espousing the inalienable rights of all men? I hope that you'll stay tuned. Hope you'll join us next week.
Join us next week.
Well, Angela, that pretty much does it for me. And
yep.
Thank you
me
all
too.
For listening. Angela, thank you for taking the time to jump on the show today and make it happen. To Lee
yeah.
for being our
joining
our
us
caller.
And giving some great comments.
And,
yeah,
he's going to post his show. I'm interested to see what that's all about. And to the rest of our listeners, always appreciate you. So
all right,
until
man.
Next week, 12:30 p.m. on the West Coast.
And that's 3:30 out east. See you guys next week. Make it a great week.
All right. Bye-bye.